Okay. Yesterday, when we talked, we noted that the octaves and octavation were part of cosmology. All of the different worlds are in seventh, and the eighth starts the new octave. All of the subdivisions of all of the worlds are in sevens, so the eighth starts a new octave, and there are octaves within octaves. In fact, the whole creation is a set of undertones from one original cosmic word. So the principle of octavation has for centuries, if not millennia, been taught in mystery schools. For that matter, astrology itself has its origin in the mystery schools. In fact, it goes back to the very early mystery schools in the Atlantean epoch. The late Atlantean epoch is when what we call the mystery schools were begun. Now there is, and we're addressing all of this week, the confusion and the controversy about octaves. What planets are octaves of each other? And that all began when it got introduced into the hands of materialistic astrologers. Now, we can't say that the materialistic astrologers are bad or wrong or anything like that. It's just that they don't know what the principle of octavation really is, what it's all about. It is of no concern to them. So when they see that Uranus has a technical side, they say that Uranus must be the octave of Mercury. They don't realize that the octavation principle doesn't work quite that way. The activation principle works on a given quality produced at a higher and a lower level. So it sort of works for them, activation, but it doesn't mean anything special to them in terms of activation, as we're going to see tomorrow how activation cosmologically works into the different worlds. So, the problem becomes when people have opinions. And everybody's entitled to an opinion, but when you have an opinion, you identify yourself with your opinion, and you get locked into your way of seeing things. And instead of seeing things as they really are, and being pure from personal opinions or set ideas or notions or anything like that that are yours and yours alone, as the possessive comes in, then that's when trouble enters in. People then feel they have to defend something instead of looking at things and seeing them as they are in reality. Now, it isn't only astrology and astrologers that have this failing or this inclination to be strongly opinionated. Philosophy has it, theology has it, psychology has it, and there are many, many other fields with which people feel very strongly about, and they attach their feelings, and when they attach their feelings, that's when things become difficult. Now, this is always difficult, and it's difficult because in spiritual things, we are character or our vehicles of consciousness are our vehicles of seeing the world. We're always looking through our own aura, so to speak. And when we're looking through that, and if it isn't pure, and by pure we don't mean attached to some set of purity notions that belong to a moral system or anything like that. We're talking about, like, a pure red is a pure red. It resonates to the basic idea of what red is. If we are not clean, You don't have to be clairvoyant to see that some people lie. Because when you look at them, it's almost always like they need to wash. Because there is that quality of they're not clean in their consciousness. Now, when we're looking through our own aura, it is the phenomenon that psychologists call projection. A person who doesn't know self, a person who doesn't do a lot of inner work to know what they are and to see their behavior for what it is and to be able to, as a divine being, judge their own actions, judge their own consciousness, such an individual can't tell what is theirs and what belongs to the other person. So they project and they see their own faults in others. Now, sometimes it's true that the faults are in both the perceiver and in the perceived. That happens quite frequently, but it is a difficult problem, so that when we do astrological work, we must be very keenly aware. Somebody is wearing a scent in here, and I think Susan had to leave because she's extremely sensitive to scents. So if you're coming here, it's all right if your sweat smells, but please don't wear things that... Okay. So we don't know what really is in the other person unless we have cleaned our own house. Unless the lens is clean, the spots we see in them may be spots in ourselves. We might also believe something so strongly. Is the scent bothering you? There's somebody's wearing a scent.
I have a pen that ran out of ink.
Oh, okay. I thought that was something that was bothering you.
Yeah, my pen ran out of ink.
All right. So, if we're not conscious of things and we don't admit things to ourselves because we don't like them, we're likely to see them in others. Now, what has happened as the social sciences have developed over the last century and a half, the social scientists, especially the psychologists, I've gotten away from what they call introspective things because they claim they're subjective, that you shouldn't look at yourself or you shouldn't examine yourself and you shouldn't see the world in terms of yourself because you're subjective. And they have this great idea that the truth is outside and that the truth is to be found only and completely in the external world. Now, there is something about the macrocosmic external world that is an objective reality, and it's an objective reality that fights back, so to speak, and it won't allow us to have a lying or a misconception of it, because if you try to make water run uphill, it's not going to run uphill. But the social psychologists, the social scientists, have thrown out the baby with the bathwater. Their descriptions, if you've ever read psychological papers, psychology papers, where they describe various qualities and traits in human behavior, they're nothing. They have cauterized the criteria of describing personality traits so much that they apply to everyone in such a way that you can't distinguish one person from another. And if you look at the way that they categorize behavior and characterize traits, they do it very differently than astrology and astrologers do. We have our own problems when we're working with astrology But theirs are is you can't make any progress at all because if you say something, oh, that might be seen as subjective, or that might be seen as opinionated, and it sort of goes back to that statement of Harry Truman. He was giving a press conference. Well, they didn't call them press conferences in those days. One of the reporters said to Harry Truman, we heard that you gave the Joint Chiefs of Staff's hell today. And Harry Truman said, no, I just told them how things were, and to them it sounded like hell. And, you know, he was a pretty objective man in himself. All right, we have problems of our own, especially the non-mystical astrologers. If you read astrological magazines, or if you see people who go for astrological readings to be told who and what they are, which is like to be painted almost by the astrologer, what happens is it's filled with astrological jargon. It's filled with all kinds. You have to be initiated, or you have to be imbued in what they like to call patois or ergot, but it's really jargon. It's, you get all these. It's true that we have astrological words in our language. We say that a person is mercurial, or that he is exhibiting martial spirits or something like that, and that those are things that are pretty well understood. But when you start bringing technical terms in, and the only way you can explain something is in technical terms, then you're getting away from the truth. And so astrology is filled with that. And this is why on every level of astrology, the idea should be burned into your consciousness. If you can't say what you know and what you experience in plain, simple English, chances are pretty good you don't know it. If you don't know it, there are a lot of people that say, oh, I know it, but I just can't say it. Well, that's a fact that your knowledge hasn't gone far enough that you can bring it all the way through you. And if you can only know, astrology is to help us point our consciousness toward reality. And reality is what we want. And if the only way we can see certain things in reality is through a filter of astrology, and that we have to have astrological terms to understand it, what its meaning is, that's a sign our understanding is not as good as we think it is. We're still reliant on astrological terminology as some kind of a crutch. So anytime we think we know something of the nature of someone's character, we don't really know it until we can put it into plain, simple, direct language. Even if we have a very keen insight, that insight gets hidden in the thicket of words or of all kinds of astrological terms. What we want to be is as clear as possible. It's like the emperor's new clothes. If we think that, you know, unless we say something plain and simple and clear, it doesn't have to be childish, but unless we say something plain and simple and clear, the truth of it's not going to come home to somebody. Sometimes kids on the playground have it better when they say, you're a liar. Now you can dress that up into all kinds of, you can say, well, you have the Saturn-Mercury tendency, and the darkness of Saturn has to do something with the way you form your thoughts and something like that. Much better say, you're a liar. You don't have to do it in such a way that you're convicting somebody or something like that, but it can be done. Now, mystical aspirants have to deal with this problem differently. As mystical students, we are taught to see ourselves and to judge ourselves clearly and objectively as much as possible. This is what is behind our retrospection exercise. In our retrospection exercise, we can see the consequences, or we can see the effects of causes that we put into being earlier in the day or earlier in our life. And when we're going from effects to causes, there is no doubt about this being the result of this. When we're going forward through the day, sometimes in our personal subjectivity, we know what we want to do, but we don't know what we really are doing because we're blind to our own prejudices. So when we're looking from consequence back to cause, we can see that there was something there that was skewing the way we were doing things, and it was skewing our relations with other people, and we develop an objectivity. We can judge ourselves clearly, and we can know what we are, and the things that are not correct, we can change. We can clarify our consciousness so we don't fog things or treat things in that way. It's almost a way that we can judge the spiritual development of someone. It's not by whether they have a claim to clairvoyance or to any magical powers or anything like that. We can judge them by how clearly they know themselves, how clearly they understand their own motivations. A person who is developed or advanced, like an initiate, has gone through the grand retrospection. Initiate has left his or her body, and in doing so, they have seen their whole life backwards and have felt it. All of the emotions that were in it have felt it very, very keenly. And there is no doubt when you experience that kind of consciousness, when you know that this is what you are and this is what it means. This is a very good way of judging ourselves and of others. Now, even though we're saying that materialistic astrologers who have no idea of the spiritual principle of activation, we're saying that we disagree with them about what the octaves are, we're not really at war with them, because they're human beings just as we are. And for the most part, they're striving to improve themselves, to do better, and to become better astrologers. I'm convinced that there are a lot of astrologers out there that have no idea of spiritual things that are probably much better astrologers than I am. Now, we're also not trying to find fault. We're just trying to clarify things that can be confusing. The incorrect assignation... I'm going to take a second and turn that off.
That's a small
I should have put it in my pocket, that's what I should have done. The incorrect understanding and assignation with regard to astrological octaves happens very easily. It happens very easily if we don't have an understanding of the principle that's involved. This is because octave planets have two distinct natures. They have the higher nature, the octave nature, and then they have the material nature, or the lower nature that is we see in the world. Now, because one of these two natures is dominant over the other, usually it is the material or the lower part that is dominant, that we tend to define things. If we're dealing only with limited observation, we tend to define things in terms of the lower octave, not even realizing that the higher is there. So, the higher side of Uranus is mystical. And in terms of mysticism, it relates to what we call the world of life spirit. Since the world of life spirit is the unifying quality of love, in which all is bound together in its common unity, it is the planet of universal or altruistic love. Even the lower octave manifestations or expressions of Uranus are altruistic. Since the world of life spirit is altruistic, it is something that we recognize that is common to all of us. If we have the Uranian intuition, we know that person. Now, a person who has worked very hard on bringing that Christ quality, the life spirit, through in love, has that Uranian quality in their aura. And when that happens, even in people who are not seers, when that happens, people will look at you and they'll say, "I know you from somewhere," even if they have never seen you before. And you know they have never seen you before. It's that recognition that they normally see only in people who are friends. And it's friends even more than family, because what happens with family, in order to survive with your sensitivity in a family setting, you often have to numb yourself to family, and you take family for granted. You know that under such and such circumstance, such and such a person is going to act this way or that way, and if you don't want to be hurt by it, you learn how to put a shell over yourself so that doesn't happen. The life spirit is one phase of the threefold spirit. There is also the divine spirit and the human spirit. The power of the divine spirit is will. The power of the life spirit is feeling. So it's willing, feeling, and the human spirit is the thinker, and it is thinking. So that there is a power that relates to each of the three qualities of the spirit. This means exactly what we saw yesterday. Whether it is a mechanic or whether it is an electronics expert, the Uranian type of person does things by feeling. They have a feel for things. I had an electronic feeling at one day. There was not a lot of computer work for me to do, and there was a rough job of making some cards to take high voltage and to be able to raise or lower the output. And so I had something like 2,000 volts on a little card that I was debugging, and somehow I managed to touch it. That's about 2,000 volt shock. And it's an interesting thing. It burns a hole right into your flesh, but it doesn't burn from the outside in. It burns from the inside out. Because when the electricity gets into the electrolytes, it causes the cellular fluid to boil. And then it boils and it burns the inside out. All right. But that was an Uranian feeling. Now, the world of life spirit is the world of truth. The human spirit is the truth knower. And the human spirit, which is the region of abstract or ideational thought, are ideas and principles. They are truths in the plural, but the one universal common glass sea of truth that is light is life spirit. And that is pure light of knowing. It's unconditioned and it's unconditional. It is so unconditioned that the hillbillies call it the void. The hillbillies is shorthand. I'm teasing Bob. The hillbillies is shorthand for the Tibetan monks, Buddhist monks. Shard isn't here, otherwise, because we have between Shard and Bob and I, the hillbillies are the Tibetan Buddhists, and the old timers are the Hindus, and the new kids on the block are the Christians. All right. This is why altruistic or friendship love is unconditioned and it's unconditional. You don't love your friend because they have such and such quality or because they give you money or something like that. You don't know why. You just love them because you love them. It's so complete and total that it has no conditions, that you just respond with love. Of course, that's a very hard thing to bring into this world, especially to bring into our personalities, which tends from time to time to be contaminated, and that produces all sorts of problems. And we're going to talk about some of those problems today, because we're going to look at the squares and oppositions as well as the trines of Uranus and Venus. Since the life spirit is timeless, the qualities of Uranian love, everything seems to stop. When you have that moment of intuition, that moment of intuition is eternal. And in it, you don't even care that it can be delineated or that it spreads through everything. All you know is you are in that moment and it is true. No wonder you can't do anything but respond to it immediately. Because the life spirit, the second attribute of the Trinity, is the preserver. It is a principle of sacrifice. And it is a principle of love that maintains or is itself by continuously giving in love. Without something to love, the life spirit has no reason for its existence. Its whole existence is giving to the other. So the principle of the life spirit is the principle of winning by losing. And so there's a great deal of sacrifice in that. But you can see what happens when that becomes manifest in the physical world. And if it gets inverted into the personality, you can see that there are real psychological problems. There are very few people who can respond to this. So very often, it is the lower part of Uranus that is the part that is that we see most often. And this is why things have gotten to be the way they are with material astrologers misassigning octaves. Now, one thing that is common, and we've said it before, is that both the higher and lower octaves of Uranus are associated with intuition. Now, there are two types of intuition. There is the Uranian intuition, and there is the Neptunian intuition. Tomorrow we'll begin speaking some about the Neptunian intuition, but the Uranian intuition, since it comes from the pure, undifferentiated truth, is something that you just get it and you respond. The Neptunian, since it comes from the human spirit, it's where everything is connected together in a kind of a spiritual chaos. When you have a Neptunian intuition, you know that something is true and you have a reason why it is true. But the reason may be very strange, because the connections that are sometimes made by Neptune are awfully strange connections. You know, where's that person coming from with all of this? Now, if we are very fortunate and if we are very soulful, we can take what is normally just an Uranian intuition and we can step into it. And when we step into it, that tiny bit of what seems to be a tiny bit of intuition is really the same thing as a full-blown enlightenment. But most people do not have the consciousness to go into it in that way. So there are very few people like Plotinus or St. Paul who have seen that universal light and have had a full-blown enlightenment. So the intuition means teaching from within. It is a spiritual experience. It has nothing to do with physical or material things. Of course, it does indirectly, because from the soul that we gather from the way we live our lives, that soulfulness makes the intuition possible in this world. Now, because intuitions are spiritual experiences, intuitions are experienced primarily through the transcendent spiritual worlds. And we've just looked into a little bit of that with regard to Uranus and Neptune. Now, because it is of the life spirit, the Uranian intuition is immediate. It is direct. How and why, that can come later. And the thing is that the spirit knows, the threefold spirit knows, that this is important and that we need to act on it now. Uranian living is spontaneous living. It's a way that you live in the life of spiritual awakeness, and you respond no matter what is said. I have friends that listen for the Uranian intuition, and they always do what the spirit tells them to do, no matter how crazy it may seem. They do it, and they come out being very helpful people to other people in ways that you could never guess by working through the mind. The Uranian intuition is the intuition of the heart. It has more to do with the blood than it does with the nerves and the nervous system and the brain. When associated with the lower manifestations, it is the spirit of discovery. When you are looking at something technically and you make a discovery, even if it's only a discovery to yourself, it is that wonderful feeling of, ah, now I know it all. You know it in a moment. And it goes much beyond what you were thinking of in the first place. If understood in the higher octave, it represents bliss. Uranus is the planet of bliss. Very few pure Uranian types around. Those types that are real mystics, they have those, those deer-like eyes, and they're harmless, and they live lives of complete devotion and feeling, and you don't find many of them. At least you don't find them in pool halls or places like that.
Like St. Francis?
Yes, probably so. In fact, the claim is made by Rudolf Steiner that St. Francis, when St. Germain was given charge of evolution in this epoch that we are in now, because of the science of it all, and because St. Francis was so mystical that mystical that his influence was would have been a distraction to the proper development of post-Renaissance humanity. And so The signer literally says that. So he sent Saint Francis to be some kind of a savior to the etheric beings on Mars. It's far-fetched. I can't say whether that things like that are true or not, but it sounds believable. All right. The lower, more material manifestations, or Varanus, are the ones that most people know about. Varanus is a technical planet, the planet of electricity, of electronics, electromechanical things, all of those kinds of things. Now, one of the characteristics of the life spirit is creative love. And that creative love, when it becomes manifest on the lower nature, becomes ingenuity. There is a kind of inventiveness. And it doesn't always have to be technological. It can even be inventiveness in the way you put together words or notes or things like that. This is not composition. This is just pure spontaneous inventiveness. The inventor knows a eureka. A eureka is an Iranian intuition. It's a moment. The technical part of it will follow later on. You just know that this is the truth. That's what the Eureka moment is like. Sometimes the lower manifestation is, instead of being altruistic love, it was, as we saw with Emma Goldman yesterday, this is good for humanity. We will purge humanity through violent revolution. And so she started riots and things like that. Now, the material manifestations are many. We're going to see a few of them today, but there are too many to try to enumerate, especially in a talk that's supposed to be an hour or less. But they're always unpredictable. Some of the Neptunian things are predictable. You can get a bead on them, but Uranus seems to come out of nowhere. And it wants change, and it wants it immediately. All right, now we're going to have to be a little bit compassionate, because we're going to look at two afflictions of Uranus and Venus, the square and the opposition. And that means we have to not be too harshly judgmental of others. Alright, our first horoscope is the horoscope of the former Prime Minister of England, Tony Blair. It's not a very easy personality to understand. It's not even easy to understand even with the aid of astrology. In astrology, the fourth house, the eighth house, and the 12th house are called houses of mystery, because they deal with things normally hidden to the outer eye. Now, there's a great illusion about it that many astrologers get fooled by. With the aid of astrology, you can begin to look within the other person. You can see things that are normally hidden to the world. But with the fourth, the eighth, and the 12th, sometimes even with astrology, there are mysteries and secrets and things that are extremely hard to bring out. You can bring some of them out, and then you figure, I know it, I've got it now, but there's mystery upon mystery upon mystery. This horoscope is especially difficult to understand because it has a rarity, and that is there is a double interception in the 12th house. And the 12th house is one of those mystery houses. So everything is hidden. This means he's born pretty far north, born in Edinburgh, Scotland, where they had those long, long, long days. And he was born in one of those long days. So there's a certain amount of subterranean influence here. Now we're going to get gossipy. Hopefully we're going to get gossipy in a way that we can have some understanding. A few years ago, the question was, why was Tony Blair so slavish in his obedience to George Bush? Because after all, Tony Blair was a liberal and George Bush was a conservative. His liberality and left-leaning is indicated by Uranus, and Uranus is a pretty strong planet in this. The Sun sextiles Uranus, so he identifies himself, or he knows himself, in working with the collective. The left always works with the collective, and he sees himself as part of the collective. But at the same time that there is that very strong sextile to Uranus, Venus is square to Uranus, and that is the thing that we're looking at. In this horoscope, Mercury is opposite to Saturn and Neptune over in the sixth house. It's also part of the double interception, which indicates that he has things that people who live toward the poles always have. He has that depressiveness. It's now called sad seasonal affective disorder. And so in the Mercury opposite Saturn and Neptune, it indicates that he was a depressive person. Venus and the Moon are the feminine planets, and they are usually more manifest in the emotional nature than they are in the mental nature. And those two planets, Venus and the Moon, are sextile. So we can see that both Venus and Uranus have an outside sextile that is very strong. So there's a square that ties together two sextiles, and that indicates a really strong moral battle inside. There's a strong moral battle because he wants to identify with what he considers something is good for all of humanity, and he does that in his feelings. And that is his response to a mental depressiveness, is his emotional nature, and his emotional nature is very liberal, except for the square of Venus to Uranus. Now, it was speculated at the time that perhaps he and George Bush were lovers. Astrologically speaking, that is a very good likelihood. In males, most commonly, homosexuality is found with Venus-Uranus afflictions. That's not the only thing that comes out of them, and we're going to see there are other things that come out of them. But it is a confusion of divine love with personal love. And in this, he's trying to build something here. That's what the square is. He's really a psychological builder. And in the building process, he's jamming together a personal love, and he's associating universal love with universal affection. And universal affection takes into account men. So it is very likely that there was some, he maybe had a huge, big romantic crush on George Bush. I'm not saying that they had a homosexual liaison or anything like that, but there is some of that there. The other thing is, some people said the reason that he was so slavish to Bush is because Bush represented oil. And Tony Blair became a spokesman for BP, Petroleum Company, and that's a possibility also, because that's where Uranus is located, is in Cancer, and all of the oil industry, especially in the United States, has been associated with the planets in Cancer in the United States chart. And you can follow the constellations of all people in and out of the United States chart and their effect, how they were affected by the oil industry. All right. Now let's look at a very different side of Venus square Uranus. The two most cheerful and cheery planets in the whole spectrum of astrological planets are Jupiter and Venus. They both are planets that like to be happy and cheerful and joyous. Now, with Capricorn rising, that's not what you associate with joyousness. That's usually pretty somber. But it is a great testament to her that she overcame that. She brought it into her humor, but she overcame that. She has the Sun conjoined Mercury, and Mercury is conjoined widely to Venus, and they are in Leo, which is extremely bright and positive.